Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Be Unique Unscripted, because an authentic life is unscripted. Presented by Bronner House Museum, Elisa Kaler, the spiritual therapist, and Little Green Oasis. Unscripted brings you amazing guests and open mic nights every Thursday night at 9 o'clock Eastern Time. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss an opportunity to learn more. Visit our calendar on beunique.org to see who we have scheduled to appear next. That's BUNEKE.org.
Well, hello, everybody. You know, most people look forward to the weekend. I look forward to Thursday nights because I know I'm going to have somebody great to talk to. And tonight, I have an encore guest. I enjoyed talking with him so much last time. I invited him to come back, and the timing was perfect because he's written another book. We're talking with Coach Michael Taylor about shattering black male stereotypes. Now, Michael Taylor is an entrepreneur, author, motivational speaker, and a radio show host. He's dedicated his life to empowering men and women to reach their full potentials. And I could go on and on and on, but I tell you what, I'm going to stop because you can read the description about Michael in the show profile. Michael, welcome to the show.
Well, hello, Mary, and thank you so much for having me on again. And once again, I absolutely love the title of your show.
Unscripted is because, you know, I could send out a bunch of questions, you know, who are you, where are you from, what did you do, but I'd rather see where the conversation takes us, more natural and organic. And,
yeah,
and the fact that you and I have a little history together helps. The last time we were talking, I had it in my head a second ago, the name of your first, it wasn't your first book. How many books have you written, Michael?
Nine.
Whoa.
Yeah. We were talking about, I'm trying to remember with you, it was probably a new conversation with men.
It was a new conversation. That was about 6 or 8 months ago.
Yeah, a little longer than that, but it's been a minute.
Time flies.
Yeah.
Time flies when you just
fun.
Do it. And I have fun every single day of my life. Somebody one day said, Mary, you need more me time. And I just looked at them and I said, you know, my entire life is me time. I don't need another life. I'm living my life to the fullest and living my life's purpose. So how could I want for anything more?
Right.
So tell me, I know that our readers and listeners will be able to read Tim Fox's review of your book, Shattering Black Male Stereotypes, in the September issue, which is the next issue coming out of Be Unique magazine. But I would like to give them a little sneak peek into what they're going to find out about.
Well, the intention of the book, first and foremost, was to empower black men to change the inner narrative that they have about themselves. Because we're so inundated with negative stories about black men in the media. Unfortunately, a lot of black men buy into some of those stereotypes. And so my intention was to challenge black men to look at some of the beliefs and assumptions they may be holding on to based on what they're seeing in the media. Now, I started writing because, and this is back in the 90s, I was in a restaurant, and I happened to overhear a conversation between these two apparently well-educated, well-spoken professional black men. And they were having a conversation about the eradication of black men from society. And it was one of the most impressive conversations I'd ever heard. And so
wow.
I listened to the conversation for, and I apologized for eavesdropping, walked over to the table, and I said, man, please tell me you don't believe what you just said. And the guy looked at me and he says, absolutely. And then he said this, don't you watch the news? I believe in 20 years, all black men will either be dead or in jail.
Oh, my
and
gosh.
It wasn't what he said that broke my heart as much as how he said it, because I could feel the powerlessness. I could feel the hopelessness in his voice, you know, as a black man. I said, you know, I know there's nothing that I could have said that would have changed his mind. So I simply put my hand on his shoulder and I said, look, don't believe the hype, my brother. Don't believe the hype. And I walked away. But as I walked away, there was a part of me that said, you have to do something. Now, at the time, I had absolutely no idea what I needed to do, but I knew that I needed to do something to help change the mindset of black men in America. Now, unfortunately, at that time, though, my life was in total chaos. I'd gone through a divorce, bankruptcy, a foreclosure, depression, and, I mean, who was I to say I could do something? Well, fast forward a few years, and I was able to rebuild my life after all those adversities. And then one evening, I remembered that conversation that I had with the guys in the restaurant, and I said, oh, you know what? I'm going to write a book, because I wanted to share how I was able to put my life back on track after all the adversities that I mentioned. So back in the 90s, 95 to be, 94 to be exact, I wrote a book called Brothers, Are You Listening? A Success Guide for the 90s. And the intention, once again, was to get black men involved in what I'll call personal development work and what some people might call self-help. And it was my attempt to do something, to change the mindset of black men in America. And that's how my whole writing journey started.
So how do you get this book into the hands of the black men who need to read it?
Well, the wonderful thing about social media is that you have access to media now that back when I first wrote my book, I did not have. And interestingly enough, back in the 90s when I wrote my first book, that was before the internet was really a thing. And so I'm not sure if you're aware of this, but the average book that's written, over the millions of books that's written each year, the average book, matter of fact, I think it's something like 80% of those books will never sell 500 copies in its lifetime, okay? Mm-hmm. Now, back in 1994 when I wrote my book, I self-published, and I sold 1,000 copies in 1 year.
Wow.
And that was without the internet, without marketing. I was just a selling machine. I was having book signings in beauty salons and different places just said, look, I just need somebody to, you know, give me a space to talk. And so that's how I got involved in all of this. And now, again, with social media, you know, I can, you know, I do online webinars. I do online seminars. Obviously, right now, press releases are really good for me, sending out press releases to different organizations talking about the book. And there's obviously a lot of interest right now with all the stuff that's going on racially in this country. And so it's really helped me a lot to be able to get the message out there.
Yeah, I think that's really important, and we have to take advantage of that. We have to find what works and use it.
Yes. And, again, I love the internet. I love technology. I do pretty much all of my own marketing myself because I really enjoy it. And, again, writing is a passion, so I'm usually somewhere posting a blog post or commenting on somebody on Twitter to try to get them to, you know, have a conversation about my work. But it's just another way of, you know, getting the message out there, just engaging with other people.
Well, I know that your press releases have always caught my attention, and that's one of the reasons you're here, you know, because even after you were on my show, you reached out to me again and said, hey, I've got another book out. Can we talk about it? And
yeah.
I haven't read your book, and I haven't read Tim's review of it, but I read your first book, and I feel like your book doesn't just speak to black men. It speaks to people of every socioeconomic background, because you're just telling it like it is, And you're opening people's eyes to what is currently out there in the world, but what the world can be. And I think that's really important.
And my primary focus is on the changing roles of manhood and masculinity in society. And so manhood and masculinity has nothing to do with race. And so I've written a total of 9 books and specifically targeted to men. I do have an emphasis on Black men because there's such a lack of books and programs targeted specifically to them. But the issue that I'm having, regardless of what color you might be, regardless of what religion you might be, I can assure you, if you're a man, if you're a male, you will gain some insights from any of the books that I've written, because it really does speak to the heart of a man, because that's the primary focus of what I do.
And I think it's important that men understand that they don't have to behave and think the way our grandfathers did and the way that the television shows us that men are supposed to behave.
Yeah, and so I'm an optimist. That's the lens through which I see the world. And the way I see it is that the current paradigm of masculinity is no longer sustainable. The old ways of being and relating as men no longer work. And I believe men are really hungry for something new and different. And so when I wrote A New Conversation with Men, that was the introduction, if you will, to my work with men, because I've been, doing coaching and speaking about men's issues for more than 25 years. But the whole intention, again, is to get men to understand that the roles of manhood are changing rapidly for the better. For the first country's history right now, there are actually more women in the workforce than men. And not only that, there are more women graduating from college than men. So all of the roles are changing. And so for the men who are really stuck in these rigid roles of what it means to be a man, they're going to be left behind. Because I think overall, men are really tired, frustrated, and hungry for something new and different. Because we've been conditioned to believe that as men, we only have 3 responsibilities, what I call the 3 P's, which is procreate, provide, and protect. Unfortunately, no one taught us how to connect. And what men long for is connection. Yet most men don't know how to attain that connection because of the current paradigm of masculinity, which says men aren't supposed to feel. Men aren't supposed to be connected to their emotions. And so when we engage men in this conversation about emotions and feelings, it's challenging for a lot of men to engage in that conversation. But the only way we're going to resolve the majority of social ills in our society is to give men the tools to deal with their emotions. Because if you look at all of the violence and anger and hatred that we have in our society, most of them are driven by a simple emotion. And a lot of times what people don't recognize and what men don't recognize is they may be acting out in anger when in reality what they really feel is sadness or fear. But because of our culture, they are only comfortable expressing that negative emotion called anger because that's just what men do. And so if we give men the tools to deal with and express their emotions authentically and openly, then we open the door for really transforming society and removing a lot of the negativity that we see and the violence that we see.
Yeah. It's hard. I'm also, I've been divorced, and I can remember I had a friend one time who kept asking my ex-husband why he was so angry. And he kept denying that he was angry because to him, anger was not an appropriate emotion to have. But yet his anger was passive aggressive. And it was ultimately one of the downfalls of the marriage. But I think it's not something that's ever taught in school. Young men, teenagers don't understand, and they don't always have good role models to learn
right.
how to process their emotions.
Right. If you remember in A New Conversation with Men, and I talked about, you know, the five illusions of manhood, and it is these five illusions that drive most negative male behavior. And the very first illusion was, to be a man, you must be non-emotional and disconnected. And that is really the foundation of most dysfunction in men's lives. They don't know
wow.
how to express themselves emotionally. And so it's really important for us to have this conversation, even though it's extremely uncomfortable for most men.
Yeah, I can understand that. If you don't have somebody as you're growing up who you can express this to, then it just makes it more and more difficult. I'm going to have to take a real quick break, and we'll be right back, Michael.
All right.
Be Unique works to change the world for a better tomorrow, using digital mediums to connect the dots of the world through professional storytelling. We have all embracing, all-inclusive heart and are always learning to create new things, to revitalize and sustain old things. While recognizing our differences, we use positive and universal thinking to strategize for a positive outcome. We collaborate people of all distinctions to create a better me, a better you, a better us. By caring for others, there's no room in our hearts for hatred, racism, or egoism. So, let our visions heal and keep the promises of what we will be. One day, by living helpful, caring, and happy, healthy, and sensual lives. With the wonderful staff and volunteers at Be Unique, we will continue to pursue that dream by making the world a better place for everyone. From everyone at BeUnique.org, to our readers and listeners, thank you for all your support. There's so much more on the way.
Well, that cut up short, but that's okay. We are back with Coach Michael Taylor, and we are shattering black male stereotypes. Well, we're not shattering them, but he's written a book about it because that's what he does. You also, you have said that adversity is your greatest ally. Can you explain that? I mean, who wants to deal with adversity, Michael? Seriously. Why is that your best friend?
It is my belief that every adversity, if we're willing to face open heart and an open mind, every adversity brings us a gift and a lesson. Now, at the time that we're going through the adversities, we probably aren't able to see it. But when we look back in retrospect, if we will commit to our own personal growth and our personal journey, we'll be able to connect the dots of how this works. And so let me just quickly share my story of how I see it. So I was born in inner city projects, Corpus Christi, Texas, to a single mom with six kids, and we were basically the poster children for poverty back in the 60s. When I was in the 11th grade, I decided to drop out of high school because I convinced myself that I was going to get rich selling vacuum cleaners, which was really a poor choice. But
Corpus Christi must have been a dirty little town.
I never sold a single vacuum cleaner, but fortunately, I landed this job with this building supply center. I worked extremely hard, climbed the corporate ladder pretty quickly, became the youngest manager in the history of the company, and only the second black manager in the 67-year history of the company. And so at the age of 23, I was living the American dream. I had the house, the wife, the 2.5 kids, and all of that. And by society standards, I had succeeded. And within about a 6.5-year time frame, that American dream turned into the American nightmare as I went through a divorce, bankruptcy, a foreclosure, a deep, deep state of depression. And I was actually homeless for 2 years living out of a car. And so on the outside, that looks pretty tragic. And at the time, it was extremely painful. But now, as I look back in retrospect, I can see how my divorce was actually the best thing that ever happened to me. Because I was stuck on that societal roller coaster that said I needed to have the house, the wife, the 2.5 kids, and all of that. And I was in a corporate job that I really didn't like. And I was in a marriage that I really didn't want to be in. And so to be honest with myself, I was really, but on the outside, it looked like I had it all together. But on the inside, I was really, really unhappy. And so as a result of my divorce, I began this amazing journey of transformation. And it began with this miracle that I received. I was sitting up late one night because I was too depressed to sleep. And I was sitting at the edge of my bed, looking across the room at my bookshelf, when I happened to notice that every book on my bookshelf had something to do with getting rich or making money. And as I looked at those books, this question just popped in my head. Michael, what if you took all the energy and effort you've used in trying to get rich and simply figure out how to be happy? And as simple as that question now, it literally changed and saved my life in an instant. As a result of asking that simple question, all of a sudden, my depression lifted, and I had this amazing clarity that I was going to be able to rebuild my life, and it was going to become extraordinary. So I went on this amazing journey of transformation, and it's a journey that I'm still on today, some 30 years later. But as mentioned, what I can now see is all of the pain, all of the adversity that I went through actually prepared me for what I'm doing today. Without those experiences, if I had to redo my life all over again, I wouldn't change a thing, because I now understand that if I changed a single aspect of it, I wouldn't be the man that I am today. So I am truly grateful for all of those adversities, because I can see in retrospect, as I mentioned, how it was perfectly orchestrated to prepare me to do what I'm doing today.
Teaching you lessons, right?
That's what it's all about. Lots of lessons. And like I said, it may not be easy. As a matter of fact, it's not going to be easy. But ultimately, if we begin this, what I call this process of transformation, and there's a saying that I love. It says, if you don't go within, you will always go without.
Oh, and so that's pretty powerful.
Yeah. So we have to be willing to go within, meaning we have to challenge our beliefs and assumptions that we hold about ourselves and the world around us. And it's an inside job. It's really about changing ourselves from the inside out. That's why my tagline says, empowering you to transform your life from the inside out. Another quote that I actually love says, if an egg is broken from the outside, life ends. Egg is broken from the inside, life begins. Everything begins from inside. And so beginning from the inside is the process of waking up and understanding who you are as a human being. And that's why I write and do what I do, to share the lessons that I've learned, but give people insights to begin that journey from inside.
Now, I'm sitting here thinking about who your audience, and you know, you mentioned that you reach out a lot on social media. Do you have an idea of what your demographic is? What age group do you typically reach the most?
Generally, from the data that I get from, like, who reads my newsletters and so forth, probably 60% of the people that listen to me and read my books happen to be white men.
Really?
Yeah. And approximately 20% of them are black men, and then the rest are women of different ethnicities.
Because we got to fix our men. You know, women love to fix men. And that's a never-ending job. And I gave that up. After my first marriage failed, I said, nope, I'm not fixing me another one. I told my current husband, I call him my best husband. I've only had the two, thank goodness. But he said something about, well, help me fix this. I said, I gave up fixing anything a long time ago. It's kind of one of our little jokes. I do find that women like to think that they can make a man better. But I think the way to make any person, whether it's a man or a woman, especially if it's a romantic interest, to help them improve is to work on yourself.
Yeah, first and foremost, you cannot change someone else, no matter how well-intentioned it may be. Only you can change you. You're the only person that you can change. Now, you can support others in changing themselves, but you can't change them. That's impossible. You can't do it. But it's important, as you mentioned, to understand that first and foremost, we have to deal with our own stuff. And we all have stuff. And we have to be willing sometimes to unpack some of that stuff, you know, let go of some of that baggage. For me, you know, one of the things I had to be willing to do in my divorce, I had a really difficult time with relationships. And I noticed this amazing pattern. I would date a woman, 3 to 4 weeks tops, and the relationships were all ending the same way. And they would say, I care too much about you to stay in this relationship, which was absolutely no me whatsoever. And
then
they would
kind
say,
kind of strange.
Yeah, but then they would say this. The reason that I'm leaving is because you're emotionally unavailable. Now, at the time, it made absolutely no sense. But now, once again, in retrospect, and all the work that I've done, I've come to understand exactly what they meant. So for me, I was your typical Mr. Nice guy, right? I had this insatiable need for approval, and I was really good at taking care of other people, especially the women in my life. But I didn't know how to allow them to take care of me. I didn't know how to allow them to give to me. I could give, but I couldn't receive. And so emotionally I was disconnected because I had this real lack of. And so even though I was a really nice guy, fun to be with, basically women didn't feel needed because I didn't allow them to support me and to be there for me emotionally. I didn't have the tools. I didn't know how to do that. And that was one of the reasons why all of my relationships were failing. So it wasn't until I did my inner work and started addressing what was keeping me from being emotionally available that I was able to heal some stuff, if you will, and learn how to allow the women in my life to really be there for me. And now I've been blissfully married for the past 19 years.
Very nice.
Yep.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. You know, you can't fix somebody else. And all the giving in the world, only what I find, and I'll bet you this is something that you've discovered yourself by taking care of yourself. You actually take care of your wife and you give her permission to take care of you too.
Yes.
Giving is a two-way street. You have to be able to receive as well as to give.
Correct. Absolutely correct. With that being said, if it's okay, I want to turn direction just a little bit.
Okay.
Because right now, you know, this country is in the midst of a lot of racial tension.
Yeah.
And I think most people believe that race relations are getting worse. I don't hold that opinion. And another one of the reasons why I wrote this book is I want to bring awareness to the origin, if you will, of stereotypes and how it impacts our society as a whole. And so I have this, what I'll call Michael Taylor's theory, and this is a theory about race relations. And so, as mentioned, I don't believe race relations are getting worse. I believe because of technology and because of the media, we get to see a lot more of what was already happening. And so there's a question that's been going around since, I can't remember the guy's name. There was a black Republican that made a comment that he said he didn't believe America was a racist country. You probably remember that, or maybe seen it throughout the media. Yeah, yeah. So he was saying that he didn't believe America was a racist country, and I 100% agree with that particular statement. But at the same time, what I recognize,
Tim Scott,
is that there,
Senator Tim Scott.
Yeah, yeah, that guy, that guy. So anyway, so my theory is this. The reason I don't believe that America is still a racist country is because I define a racist country as a country when the majority of people intentionally hate, create systems that keep other groups out. So if we go back in this country's history, there was a time when the majority of white people in this country were racist, period.
Yes.
That's our history. Now, as a result of that majority racist mentality, then systems like slavery and all of that was put into place. But now, if you think about it, this country is only 250 years old or so.
Right.
And within that time frame, America has gone from all of the negative racist mentality, if you will, so that now I believe the overwhelming majority of white people are not racist. So what makes a country racist is when the majority of people are racist. And I say that no longer is the case. And so in the book, Shattering Black Male Stereotypes, I put out a theory. I have what I call the CWBS. The CWBS stands for the collective white belief. In the day when the majority of people were racist and they were implementing programs and systems that kept black people from doing certain things, it was the result of the CWBS. It comes back to what some people would call consciousness. So consciousness,
right.
the majority of people in the country had a consciousness that said white people were superior, black people were inferior. So they put all these systems in place to try to support that and prove that. Well, if you think about it, in my short 60-year time frame, the transition that we've made, to me, is nothing short of miraculous in terms of the shifting of the consciousness of white people in this country. Because what has happened is, I believe, every generation is less and less racist for several reasons. Number one, back in the day, the reason that a lot of people were racist was because they weren't even exposed to people of other races, and so their belief system was such that they passed down from generation to generation that white people were superior. But they didn't even get a chance to see on a regular basis or interact with people of other races. Well, now you cannot live in America and not be exposed to people of other races. So you now have an opportunity to see, and in a lot of cases now as white people, remove some of the negative stereotypes that were perpetuated by white people. And so if you'll notice the conversation that's been going on, especially as a result of the George Floyd incident, white people are having a conversation about things like white privilege and, you know, white fragility. And so there's a whole shift, I believe, in consciousness, or what I call the CWBS, because I think what happened is when America elected Barack Obama president, a lot of white people went into this, oh, racism is over. You know, we got a black president.
How naive.
Racism goes. But a lot of people felt that way and believed that and still believe that to this day. But my point here is that the CWBS, the collective white belief system, has shifted to where the majority, and I'll say the majority of white people are not racist, do not harbor anger and hatred towards other races and claim to be superior. That's how I define racism. Racism to me is when someone intentionally harbors anger and hatred towards people of another race. And I think
that's what happened in Nazi Germany.
Sure. Sure. So again, my optimism comes from my belief in human evolution. I personally believe in human evolution. I personally believe that there is a divine intelligence that created and is still creating this amazing universe we live in. And this intelligence knows exactly what it's doing. And it's not going to allow us to screw up what it created. So remember how I was talking about, you know, adversity always brings us a gift and a lesson?
Yes.
Well, see, there's a unique principle. There's a universal law, a universal principle called breakdown, breakthrough. If you look throughout nature, you'll see it everywhere. For example, if I plant a seed, I plant that seed in the ground, and it has to grow a root system. That's what we call the breakdown period. Now, the breakdown period is necessary for the plant to gain the root system to hold and keep it in place once it breaks the ground. Now, once it breaks the ground and expresses all that it is, that's the breakthrough period, okay? So that's in nature. Now, if you look at human beings as a species collectively, currently humanity is in major breakdown. It's in major breakdown. But breakdown is always, always, always preparation for breakthrough. Why? Because that's the way divine intelligence set it up. So if you look at humanity as a whole, okay, what happens is the media loves to put us in a position of us against them.
Yeah.
They racialize.
Like the controversy.
They racialize everything. They sensationalize everything. And it's always us against them, be it black or white, being rich or poor, being a gay or straight. There's always this us against them mentality. But see, humanity doesn't see it that way. Humanity, divine intelligence, sees all human beings as the same. There's only one human family. As we move through all this racial chaos, and we will move through it, trust me, it's inevitable. We will move through it, and as we move through it, we'll come to the understanding that we are all one. And that's something that you can't change, and nothing can thwart that because divine intelligence has set that in motion. That's Michael Taylor's perspective on it.
Well, Michael Taylor, I think you've got a very good perspective because it aligns with mine, so naturally I think it's good. It just makes perfect sense. That's the way I was raised as a child. You know, we were taught that my mother put it eloquently because she was a child during the great, the Wall Street crash, the original one. And I remember having a conversation with her, and I asked her, I said, well, you know, were you and my grandparents considered wealthy or poor, you know, because they had land, they had property, and I knew that they had, well, they had a truck or a car or something like that. It was a pickup truck that my grandfather used to pick up all the people in the neighborhood and take them to church on Sunday. And so I said, well, y'all must have been considered pretty wealthy to have a truck when nobody else did. She said, Mary, we were all very poor. Everybody was poor. There were some who were poorer than others and some who were less poor. But she said, I don't remember ever not feeling that we had more money than anybody else. And she told me many stories about how my grandparents raised her and she raised us the same way. People are people. And it doesn't matter whether you have or you have not, you're still a person. It doesn't matter where you go to church. It doesn't matter if you go to church. As long as you are a good person and treat everybody nicely, That's really all that matters.
Yeah, and again, one of my passions is the study of consciousness and philosophy and psychology and human behavior. And mm-hmm. I'm absolutely fascinated by why we do what we do, you know, as human beings.
Right.
And so interestingly enough, as a man who happens to be black, see, I have been attacked, vilified, and criticized for my optimism. I've been accused of not being black per se because of some of the beliefs that I have about, you know, about America. But at the same time, I believe very strongly in divine intelligence, and I think everything does happen for a reason.
Absolutely.
And I believe when we get in alignment with this divine intelligence, it's impossible. So for me, for example, I have an 11th grade education. Now, how is it that this young black kid with only an 11th grade education can climb the corporate ladder, lose everything, pick himself back up, and now have written 9 books and been featured on national television, you know, radio, and so forth? Well, I'm not that arrogant to believe that I'm just some smart guy. I know that there's a divine intelligence that I'm connected to that has been guiding my steps, if you will, and providing me with the knowledge and the wisdom that I have to share with others. And so I simply, I call it the universal groove. And the universal groove is based on something that Albert Einstein said. Albert Einstein said, and this is really important to remember for the listeners, he said, everything is energy. That's just the way that it is. Match the frequency of the reality that you want to create, and there's no way you can't create that reality.
Amen.
It can be no other way. And then he said, this is not philosophy. This is physics. Therefore, there is a science. There is a science behind creation. There is a science behind our ability to do certain things. So this science, this whole idea of energy is when we're connected to divine intelligence. I'm sure you've heard the term law of attraction, right?
Yes. Oh, yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So law of attraction basically says that what you put out comes back to you, right? Well, if you pay attention to Einstein and what he was saying about everything is energy, there's a physics behind the law of attraction and why and how it works. And so for me, I'm a firm believer in focusing on being positive. Because if I focus my attention on being positive, I'm not denying that there's negative out there, but I don't allow that negative energy in me. Because if I do, I'm going to attract more negative into my life.
Yes.
By being positive, I'm going to attract more positive things into my life. So therefore, I focus my attention on positivity. I focus my attention on the energy of positivity because I know that that's what I'm going to attract into my life. And so as I look at all the things that I've accomplished over the last 25 years or so, because I've always focused on positivity. You know, I was sitting in the back seat of my car when I was living out of my car, and I had these little sticky notes where I would write little goals, or basically what I call intentions. I'd write these intentions on these little sticky notes, and I'd stick them on the back seat where I was sitting. Now, think about that. I had no money, no job. I'm sitting in the back seat of this car, and on one of the sticky notes, I wrote, I am going to become a best-selling author. Now, I had absolutely no evidence that that was possible. Number one.
But you had no evidence that it was not possible.
Exactly. So focus your attention on the positive. So I wrote on the sticky note that I was going to become a best-selling author. And as I think look back and I remember that, what I remember is as I'm sitting in the back of this car, not knowing where my next meal was going to come from, not knowing where the next dollar was going to come from, but yet I still had this positive energy that I was going to be able to change my life. And so it begins in our imagination. You have to start imagining and seeing in your mind's eye that which you want to create.
Absolutely.
And so if you think about what Einstein said, and if you think about the law of attraction, for me, I was putting out positive vibes because I had a belief, I had an inner knowing that somehow, without any evidence, I was going to be able to create what I was writing on the back of these little pages. And so for those who may be leaning toward the more religious side, it's simply a matter of faith.
And so, yeah. You know, it's interesting. I do a show every Monday called Manifest Monday. And I always tell everybody, you know, whether you call it the law of attraction, the secret, or an answered prayer, it works. It doesn't matter what you call it.
Yeah.
But,
and again, there's
science.
Yeah. Again, I think for all the people who are listening, just imagine that every thought you think attracts something to you. Knowing that, what are you going to be thinking about now?
Good question.
So if that's literal, which I think it is.
I believe it is.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So if you listen, you ever listen to a guy or read a guy named Mike Dooley?
Oh, my gosh. Mike. He sends me. Yeah, absolutely. Messages from the universe. Every day I get one.
The notes from the universe. Yeah, I love Mike Dooley. Mike says his claim to fame was thoughts become things.
Yes.
What you think about, you bring about. And so for me, as a man who happens to be black, I am grateful that from a very early age, even without knowing how that works, I was using that even from a very early age. Because when I was 13 years old, I read Think and Grow Rich when I was 13. And I'll never forget that book because that book began my process of positive thinking at 13.
That's pretty phenomenal. And you don't always know. In fact, I'll tell you more than about 20 years ago, I just very cavalierly mentioned to a friend, one day I'm going to have my own radio show and I'm going to have you as a guest. I just said it because I don't always filter my thoughts. I don't always think about what I'm saying. It was just the words that came out that day. And I forgot all about it. Now, if I had been mindful when I said that, my radio show would have come about a lot quicker. But last year she was on my show and she said, Mary, I remember when you said you were going to have your own radio show and I'd be a guest on it. I'm like, I said that? But it's true. If you're mindful, you get what you want a lot quicker. And if you're, but I want everybody to understand nothing comes without some price. You know, you've got to be able to put in some sweat equity. Some things come as if by magic, and I can be unique as absolute proof of that for me because 4 years ago when we first started thinking about this, I was just looking for something to give my life meaning. And I've realized in the last year that this is actually my life's purpose. To be able to share stories like yours and the stories of your, the words in your books that are changing lives. That's what I enjoy doing. I think it has purpose. And I never thought I'd be doing this, but just imagine if I knew what I was doing when I was manifesting. We have power, again, and we don't even know it all the time.
Yeah, and also understand that everything is a divine timing. Everything is a divine timing. Now, when The Secret first came out, I remember when I watched it, and I went, well, I understand the premise of it, but they left out the most important part. They didn't really talk about action, taking action. And that's where I think The Secret fell short, because people thought, if I just sit at home and think about things, then I can attract it to my life. That's not how the universe works. You set in motion the intention.
No, you have to put action on it.
Yeah, you set in motion the intention, and then you start paying attention to the synchronicities that begin to happen, but ultimately you got to pray and move your feet.
Yes.
You know, you've got to go out there and make some things happen. You can't just wait and hope and pray that, oh, yeah, I'm going to think about this hard enough and it's going to just happen. But, again, I don't discount the fact that you can manifest maybe by just thought alone, but by taking action, I'm sure. Because what the action does is it builds trust in the universe. And here's what I mean by that. When I was sitting in the back of that car, not knowing what I was going to do next in terms of money, and I would say, God, you know, I know that you're going to bless me financially. You know, I was all about abundance thinking and so forth and so on. But every day I was up out looking for a job. I wasn't just sitting in the back of the car saying, I hope you send me some money.
Right.
I said, I hope you open a door for me to get a job so that I can make some money. So you have to be willing to put action behind it. And so the more I did that and took that action, then I just kept trusting, okay, God, I know that if I do my part, you're going to do your part. If I pray and then move my feet, then you're going to open some doors. And ultimately, that's how I was able to get back on my feet.
Yeah, you cannot expect a government subsidy from the universe. You have to be able to show the universe, or, you know, the divine, I actually call it GUS, because it's an acronym for God, Universe, Source, or Spirit. And to me, it's so important to do something. When we first started talking, you mentioned serendipity. Not serendipity, synchronicity. When we came up with the name for Be Unique, Jennifer and I were sitting there and having lunch, talking, discussing, you know, two senior women, middle-aged, all, I don't know what age anything is anymore. But, you know, we were just sitting there talking, and we were totally disgruntled with what we were doing and what we were earlier we talked about receiving and giving. You know, we felt like we were giving and getting nothing in return. So it was time to move on. And we were both in different jobs and volunteer situations. So we sat down, had lunch, and we were discussing it. And we just looked at each other, put our forks down and said, whatever we do, it has to be unique. And that's how we came up with the name. But let's see, 2011, she and I both, we tried to do this again back then, but all we did was sit there and we'd go out for tacos after lunch, you know, after work, because at that time we were working together, same job. And we were very unhappy and trying to get happy, but we'd go to lunch and we'd complain and we'd dream and we'd talk about it, but we never put any action on it. This time, the difference was the divine timing was better. It was so much more right than we could have been, you know, could have had in 2011. But we both immediately said, okay, when you go home, you work on the logo. When you go home, you work on the business plan. And we started each dividing what we had to do. And she created the logo. I started working on the business plan. I did the research into what had to be done. She did the research that she needed. You know, so together we were working like a dynamic team, And we never stop doing that. But if you just expect things to fall into your lap, you're going to have your feelings hurt.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, you got to be able to take some action. And so, as I look back over the last 20, 25 years of my life, my superpower is action. I've always been action-oriented. Goal setting is, sort of second nature to me. I no longer call it goal setting. I call it intentions. I set intentions, and then I just manifest those intentions. And I'm getting really, really good at it.
Good. Practice makes perfect, for sure.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And I think it's really important for people to understand that whatever, if you want to make a change in this world, sometimes you have to be that change. You can't just sit back and wait for somebody else to, imagine if Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. had said, you know what, I have a dream, but I'm going to let somebody else do all the footwork. If Rosa Parks had said, I'm tired, but I'll trudge onto the back of the bus anyway, nothing would have happened, because people take a stand, but they also put action behind their stance. That's how change happens.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think there's so much power in that word. I think most people may not fully grasp it, but let's kind of touch base on it, that taking a stand. Wayne Dyer, one of my favorite mentors. Yeah, favorite mentors, taught me something that really stuck with me. He said, never focus your attention on that which you are against. Always focus your attention on that which you are for.
Yes.
So take a stand for something. Become that. Don't take a stand against, for example, people always, I'm against racism. Well, in being against racism, you create racism. If you want to eliminate racism, you have to take a stand for unity. You have to take a stand for diversity. You have to take a stand for love. You can't take a stand against stuff, because you create that stuff that you're against. So by focusing your attention on that which you are for, it comes right back to the positive energy thing. When you take a stand for what you're for, it's a positive energy. It will attract more of what you're for into your life. So important. So important.
Exactly. And when you're manifesting, you have to manifest only with positive language, because the universe takes that not or that anti, whatever it happens to be, and says, oh, well, in perfect example, my ex-husband for, I don't know, probably 15 or 16 of our 25-year marriage kept asking me and talking about divorce. And I didn't even realize it at the time that he was manifesting divorce. I wasn't looking for a divorce. I didn't think I wanted one. I'm glad I got it. In the end, it turned out to be a blessing in disguise. But when he, just little subtle hints over and over, are we going to get a divorce? You would never leave me. If you ever leave me, let's do it this way. If we over and over and over. And I'm like, why does he say these things? But now I realize he was manifesting a divorce and he didn't even realize it.
Yeah, it becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah, he kept planting the seeds. And eventually I realized, mm-hmm. Well, there's something to everything he said.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, Michael, let me tell you, we have totally gone off topic of your book, Shattering Black Male Stereotypes, but we did talk about it in the beginning. And our hour is up.
Already.
Yeah. Time flies whenever we're together. I don't know. I guess we just kind of get into it. We ramble around till the hour's over. But I really enjoyed this. I love talking with anybody who likes to manifest, because it's all, I know that if someone is manifesting, they are a positive person and they're an action person, because you can't get what you want if you don't. First of all, you can't get what you want if you don't know what you want. So you've got to be clear. And that's yeah. something that you are definitely clear about.
Yep, very clear.
Yes.
I am here, to make an impact on the world.
And I think you're doing exactly that. If anybody wants to know more about you, they can find you on CoachMichaelTaylor.com, correct?
Correct, yes.
And what about social media?
Same tagline. Coach Michael Taylor at, you know, if you go to Instagram, at Coach Michael, Twitter,
excellent.
At Coach Michael T, Facebook, at Coach Michael Taylor.
All right. So basically, if they just go on there and type in Coach Michael Taylor, they are going to find you.
Absolutely.
And
yeah, I'm at the top of SEO, search engine optimization. You just type in
yeah.
Coach Michael Taylor, you'll find.
Awesome. Thank you. Thank you so much. I really enjoyed
you.
Talking with you, and I look forward to doing it again. Get another book out, let me know, and we'll throw you on the show.
Well, I've had three other books since that one you just mentioned.
Have you really?
my latest book, the title of my latest book, which came out in January, is called The Good News Is the Future is Brighter Than You Think.
Wow. And that is good news.
Yep.
That's the best news I've heard all day, actually. The future is brighter than you think. And anybody who – I think that's an excellent book for this life that we're living right now in the middle of – people talk about COVID as if it's a new concept, but the world has endured pandemics before.
Absolutely.
And we have continued to thrive as human beings. I mean, if you don't believe it, just look at our population. We're constantly having babies. We're constantly growing and expanding. And we're not going to let a little virus get us down.
Yep. We'll move through this. No question.
Absolutely.
It's just a breakdown period. It's a mandatory breakdown period, preparing us for the big breakthroughs. There you go.
And as a gardener, I can understand that so clearly. Real quick little segue here. I had a mound of dirt. We did some home improvement, so you know there's always dirt that gets moved. And there was this big, ugly pile of dirt in my yard, and we couldn't figure out what to do with it. We didn't want to throw it away because it's dirt, for crying out loud. And I just was looking at it, and a friend of mine says, oh, you ought to just plant some flowers on it. And I said, yeah, maybe. Well, I got to get those weeds off first. Well, that wasn't hard to do. The weeds were just surface. And I literally went out there and I just threw seeds out, and then I threw a little bit of water on top of it. I have a little, I call it Flower Mountain. It is covered in flowers that the bees and the butterflies love. So it's also pretty. Now I have this beautiful mound of flowers in my yard that once was an ugly eyesore. It's all about perspective.
There you go.
But I watched those seeds, you know, they had to break out of their little shell and die in order to come forth and bring beauty into the world.
Right. That's the way the universe works.
Yes, I like the universe. It's very, very cool. And I'm glad to be a part of it. And I'm glad to know you, Michael. I'm going to exit on out of here and say good night. And I hope you have a pleasant evening. All right.
Good night. Take care.
Thanks. You too.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
If you like the show tonight, let us know. Call 321-417-4309 or email mary@beunique.org to ask how you can sponsor the show. It's simple and doesn't have to cost much at all. Visit beunique.org for even more details. That's BUNEKE.org. Join the global world changers who already know how Be Unique helps bring together like-minded humans who are making the world a better place. Read the magazine and blog posts, watch our videos, listen to our podcast, and visit our social media from one location, and let's work together to change tomorrow by finding solutions today. Visit BeUnique.org to learn more. That's BUNEKE.org.
Thanks for listening, and remember, best way to be unique is to just be you.